Chapter 1. Hero Street, USA. On the brilliant, crisp morning of Memorial Day, 1968, a crowd gathered at the foot of Billy Goat Hill. They shuffled expectantly, craning to see the Los Amigos marching band parade into view in their dazzling orange satin shirts and flat-brimmed bolero hats. The sun glinted off line after line of bobbing horns as the band strutted up the street. Cameras flashed and children clapped. Then smiles flickered through the crowd like the twinkling of stars as they recognized the song the band played, and the words echoed in the onlookers' minds. It was a deliciously ironic choice of music for the event, but on this day, for this crowd, few songs could have been better than America from West Side Story. The story of misunderstood and shunned Hispanics trying to make their way in America was one they knew too well. As the notes faded away and the band stomped to a halt, Joe Terranas stepped forward. He read out 8 names. Then a small huddle of dignitaries unveiled the new red, white, and blue street sign marking the corner of 2nd Street and 1st Avenue. It read, Hero Street, USA. The spectators applauded wildly. Tears, sad, proud, and bittersweet, streaked the cheeks of men and women alike. It was a moment more than a decade in the making. All the fighting and all the frustration had finally paid off. They had won. Terranas smiled. The mass of people included friends and relatives of the 8 men Terranas had named, journalists, and a U.S. congressman, Thomas Railsback of Illinois. I am proud to represent this neighborhood, whose families generously gave the best they had to this country, Railsback told the crowd. I question whether any group in this country has done more. In fact, no other place had. It was barely a block and a half long, a rocky earthen trail pockmarked with potholes. But that tiny street in that tiny railroad town had earned its new designation with the blood and tears of its residents. The Department of Defense examined the records and determined that the families of 2nd Street in Silvis, Illinois, had sent more of their children to serve in World War II and Korea than residents of any other similarly sized stretch in the country. Despite that distinction and its lofty new name, the street remained an unpaved strip of dirt that turned to mud when it rained. This was where the families had been forced to live, in abandoned railroad boxcars away from the rest of the city's white residents, simply because their parents were Mexican. They had no electricity, no running water. They used outhouses even in the deep of winter. Snow blew through the cracks in the boxcar walls, and the kids had to punch through the ice in their washbowls to clean up in the morning. The children worked in the fields, topping onions, before they were even old enough for school, and they lied about their age to get jobs on the railroad when they got to junior high. The other school kids called them dirty Mexicans. Still, when war threatened the country they now called home, the men had stepped up to defend it. One family sent 7, another 6. In all, the 22 families who lived on that one street sent 57 of their children to fight. 8 died. And not just any place. Somehow, out of the thousands of battlefields where they could have fought, the 8 had ended up at key turning points of both conflicts, engaging in crucial battles and participating in new, pivotal ways of waging war. Death found them in many ways and many places, in a distant jungle, a frozen forest, and trapped in the flaming wreckage of a bomber blown from the sky. One died going over a fence during the greatest paratrooper assault in history, another in the biggest battle of World War II, yet another riddled with bullets in an audacious act of heroism during a decisive onslaught, a world and a war away. Frank Sandoval toiled in the leech-infested